I reject that suggestion completely.
Radical government.
National security mission.
Radical government.
Coalition of the willing.
Radical government.
This is the Perth Indie Media Radical Radio Show, and on the phone with us now we have Mark Cox. How you going, Mark?
Good, thanks yourself, Alan.
Good, and Mark is a lawyer, and he will be speaking at the Laws of Terror Public Forum on Friday, November the 4th, which starts at 5:45 to 7:45 at the UWA Social Sciences Lecture Theatre. There's a website been built, Perth Indie Media made a website for it, and if you just go to perth.indiemedia.org, you can find out lots of information. There's a feature story on the front. The speakers at the forum, the Social Justice Network's collaborating with over 50 other civil society groups and the Institute of Advanced Studies at UWA to organise a public forum on so-called anti-terror legislation. And the speakers will include Senator Rachel Stewart, Carmen Lawrence and Mark Cox, as well as, I believe, Dennis Eggington from the Aboriginal Legal Service and a Media Alliance representative and others. So, Mark Cox, what will you be talking about on Friday night?
I've been asked to speak in a broad outline on the legislation itself and the background of legislation introduced since 2002 to deal with the anti-terrorism issue, and I'll be dealing with those particular varied and numerous provisions that are of particular concerns in the framework of human rights, Australia's compliance with international obligations, the rule of law, and the doctrine of separation of powers.
Okay, so one thing for us here, we operate basically an activist radio show, and we could be accused pretty much every moment of this show as an act of sedition, and that's
right.
Something that concerns us.
Well, that's right. The sedition provisions provide for an intention to urge disaffection with the government or the sovereign, amongst other plethora of other provisions.
Disaffection, don't you love that term?
Yes, and the provisions already existing in the criminal code, defining terrorist act, is itself also a cause for concern. It makes mention there of providing assistance in any form whatsoever to a country at war with Australia or to a country in which there are forces at war with or fighting Australian Defence Forces. So, for example, a person who proffers himself as a human shield, as Australians have done during the invasion of Iraq, or people who, for example, offer up prayers for the people of Iraq, or a union expressing solidarity with a union in Iraq or any country where there's conflict with Australian Defence Forces or at war with Australia would potentially be considered to be engaged in terrorist acts.
One thing that John Howard pointed out was, though, there's a fair use kind of clause with that, or not even necessarily a clause, but it would be taken with fair use, and he said it'll still be fine to have a go at the Australian government. I mean, there's nothing really clear on that, though, is there?
Well, the problem with that argument is that the definition of terrorist act and the offences in relation to terrorism are cast in hugely broad and vague terms, and yet the defences are cast in extremely narrow terms. So the problem then again is that the burden is thrown on the defendant, who doesn't have all the resources of the state, isn't given all the information that is used against them by the state, has then got to prove and carry the burden of proving that it falls within these narrow and limited exceptions to what is considered to be a terrorist act. And so there well may be a continued scope, and one would consider that it's essential to be continued scope for democratic protest action and critique with the government. But whilst the law is cast in these terms, we're dependent on the good nature of the government not to use the terms or to exploit the terms of the legislation as it exists. And of course, where there are minority sections of the community who are being targeted, whether they be Muslims or activists or whoever, there is huge scope for abuse. So what I would suggest is that we can't simply depend on or trust the government to allow public debate, as it says it will.
Yeah. Also, one of the other things that strikes me that in that part of the legislation is that the burden of proof is put onto the person who's accused. Now, that's not necessarily what usually happens in courts, is it?
Well, it's a principle of common law that a person is presumed innocent until they're proven guilty and proven guilty beyond all reasonable doubt. And that is why the provisions for preventative detention orders and the provisions for control orders are so shocking, because essentially a person can be taken into preventive detention, and the persons can include children, 16 years and older, and handicapped persons, and those persons can essentially be put away at successive periods of 24 hours or 48 hours, or the state governments have said they enact legislation providing for up to 14 days, and those can be rolled over indefinitely. There's no limitation on those detention order periods in the present legislation, so there's huge room for abuse there. I mean, the initial orders can be simply applied for by one federal police officer to a superior superintendent or more superior officer, and those can be rolled over every 24 hours. The control orders are particularly disturbing because they are applied to persons potentially who have trained with an organization in the past that they have nothing to do with nowadays. That organization was not a terrorist organization at the time that they were training or involved with them, and now they could be held essentially incommunicado for up to a year in a way that was essentially a criminal sanction applied retrospectively. Now that again is a breach of common law principles.
Yeah, it seems to be a pretty repressive pretty repressive set of laws there.
Certainly. I mean, those are just some of the examples. I don't know what's happened to the shoot-to-kill provisions, because some media reports say that they've been abandoned by the Prime Minister. Others say that they've simply been recast. I mean, what is of enormous concern here is that we haven't seen the, and we weren't supposed to even see the draft that ACT Chief John Stanhope released. He wasn't supposed to release that, and he got in trouble for releasing it. And then he was, according to him, banned from further discussions on further modifications that has got all the other states lining up, or rather not all of them, the New South Wales, Queensland, Victorian, South Australian, Tasmanian state governments, state premiers lining up to support. So now we're only given information in the form of press releases from the Prime Minister or these other premiers, and so we don't know what the legislation presently is, and there's a ghastly haste to push it through Parliament. So on top of the fact that we're dealing with what appear to be rather shocking provisions in this legislation, there's a very disturbing lack of seeking legitimate community input to them.
Well, that's right. I suppose something like the forum on Friday night is great for that. It's amazing to see all these groups come together over the last week or so, really. Over 50, speaking to Colin today, he said there's over 50 groups involved in this, and I reckon there'll be a pretty packed house there on Friday night.
Well, I hope so. This is an issue that, and I think it speaks volumes that there are such a huge is such a huge range of organizations and individuals who have gone public and said, you know, this is heading and taking us towards a police state. The ex-judge of the, I think it was of the federal court, Fonduza, who is now the president of the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission, the president of the Australian Law Council, amongst many other prominent Australians, have said that this legislation is of such concern because it potentially takes us to a police state. So, yes, this forum was organized in a very short period of time, and yet has attracted a wide range of organizations that are quite legitimately concerned about it. And I think the other thing to remember that is of great concern is what the Attorney General, the Federal Commissioner for Police, and the head of ASIO have been saying about this legislation. They say this legislation is necessary because without it, the people that they are concerned with would never face a court of law. Now, if we can't deal with threats to democracy or to the safety of the Australian public in a way that is proportionate to that threat by legitimate means that still respect human rights, then we have serious concerns about the sorts of police state measures that might be used. It was interesting that when Tony Jones interviewed McKilty, the Federal Police Commissioner on Lateline on the 31st of October, he was asked, could this the provisions for preventive detention orders target witnesses? And he couldn't rule out that they would. So in other words, if you're on a scene or you're a witness to something that's in any way vaguely connected with the broad definition of a terrorist act, you could potentially be subject to a prevention detention order. If you're a family member or a relative of someone who is, you could be subject to a preventive detention order, and you can't tell your family that you are unless you're a child. And even if you are a child, the parent that you do tell can't tell the other parent or any other member of the family that you have been subjected to a detention order, and that's subject to hefty prison sentences.
Yeah, it's I mean, it certainly sets the foundations for a police state. Yet Howard today says we have to do it immediately because there's a potential terrorist threat, a specific threat. He was saying today. Did you hear about that?
I did, and I suspect.
Pretty handy, isn't it?
Spurious. I suspect that that's a spurious coincidence because the Attorney General has come out and said we need to push this legislation that's been pushed through today because of this latest information. Yet they drafted this legislation ages ago. Mm. And yes, and the second point to be made there is if they have this information of an imminent or a real a terrorist threat, why haven't they changed the terror alert level from medium?
Indeed. Yeah, which hasn't moved at all day from my observations. I think Brian's got a question for you, I think.
Yeah, how are you going? Just a question on, I believe it's like four of the state premiers have to agree to the laws, but for example, if WA, Jeff Gallop decides, no, we don't want, you know, certain laws, how can they be then enacted into state law? And exactly what laws are going to be enacted, have to be enacted into state?
Well, they don't have to enact, they don't have to adopt the federal legislation into WA law for it to apply in WA. There's a section 109 of the Commonwealth Constitution that provides that to the extent of any inconsistency in areas of law that is provided for that the Commonwealth has power to make laws for, any state law is invalid. So they can override state law and they can impose it on WA.
Okay. All right, well, thank you very much for your time, Mark, and we'll see you on Friday evening at the Terror Laws Forum.
Thanks, Tom.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
See ya.
If you and I would just realize that once we learn to talk the language that they understand, they will then get the point.